Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. Steve is here with me in studio. It's relatively early on Saturday, so we're being responsible adults, both of us for a change. Super Tuesday was obviously on Tuesday, and boy, the political scene has flipped. I was this close to publishing an article about how Joe Biden needs to accept the fact that he's no longer the mainstream candidate, and he's got to go and step aside for the good of the party, and instead, everyone else stepped aside and handed it to Joe, and he is now leading in delegates and had a Super Tuesday that makes him, in my opinion, far and away the front runner, with really only Bernie standing in his way. Am I oversimplifying?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're definitely oversimplifying, but you're not wrong, right? I think there's a lot more to it. You know, I said back, you know, when the primary season started with Iowa and New Hampshire and Biden getting off to a bad start, you know, the one thing I said after Nevada was, let's wait until after Super Tuesday before we declare Joe dead.
Right.
Now, that doesn't change the fact that he still, again, I didn't like him back when Obama tapped him as VP. Right. I don't think that he's the best candidate, right? I don't think he's the guy that I want running the country, but enough people have decided that they feel better with him than anybody else. So that puts him in the lead. I still think, like if you said, I still would like him to go away.
Right. Well, I mean, go away now. It's in favor of Bernie.
Right. But I mean, his gaps are what they are. Like, that shit doesn't change. The fact that he still was talking about nominating the first black female senator and like
150 million Americans died of, like, gun violence.
None of that shit changes, right? Like, he still said it. Like, all those things are true. So, you know, the whole idea that he is probably not the best candidate, I think that's still true. But the problem is, a lot of people feel more comfortable with him than they do with anybody else on the Democratic side. And so that's kind of the direction that we're going. Now, this is kind of my worst case scenario, being left to choose between Biden and Bernie. And Biden's got a decent lead. It's still tight enough. There's still a fair number of delegates left. The winner has to get to, I think, 1,911 delegates.
Like,
and Joe Biden has 664. Sanders has 573. You know, it's only 100 delegates. It seems like a lot. But when you've got still another, you know, 1,000
right
to go, you know, 1,300 delegates to go before you get to a winner, you know, there's plenty of room for Bernie to make up. You know, I mean, we still have plenty of states left. So I think right now those two have to battle it out. You know, Mike Bloomberg and Elizabeth Warren both stepped aside and suspended their campaigns. You know, the only one who's still in it technically is Tulsi Gabbard.
My girl Tulsi.
But, I mean, she has two delegates. So she's got quite a ways to go to really be considered. To be considered a legitimate candidate. So, you know, we're really down to Biden and Sanders.
And to me, it seems plain as day that the mainstream of the DNC saw Bernie coming strong and said, "We don't want this guy," which they clearly don't, and convinced Klobuchar and Buttigieg to drop out before Super Tuesday and to immediately endorse Biden. That's telling to me. You think I'm going overly conspiracy?
No, I don't. No. You're not going overly conspiracy theory, but I think I think there's a lot of people who put way too much into endorsements.
Well, I mean, didn't campaign at all in Minnesota, Klobuchar's home state, and won it handily.
And but it wasn't because Amy Klobuchar said, "Go Joe Biden."
She did do that.
Okay, but that's not why people voted for him, right? Come on, now, you're not this.
They take away your first option, and your first option says go to option two, and that's your second option. I think that does have influence.
You're wrong.
Okay, no.
You're wrong. I mean, they interview people. People are just like, no, it's not because Amy Klobuchar or Pete Buttigieg said you know, go, you know, half the people don't even know the who their people endorse, right? Like that's a big thing in the media. Who do they endorse? That's to keep talking heads like Julie Mason going and everybody else on Sirius on the POTUS network. But that's not how people operate. That's not how the people who actually go into the booth and vote, that is not how they operate. That's not how you operate. That's not how anyone you know is. That's not how they operate.
Okay, fine. But people who were going to vote for Klobuchar, but she was removed as an option.
Right. Once she was removed as an option, okay, then that changes who they vote for. That impacts their vote. But the endorsement, that all doesn't. Right. And the DNC pressuring Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg, like, did the DNC apply pressure? Sure they did. But was that the main reason why Klobuchar and Buttigieg pulled out? No, they saw that there wasn't a mandate for them whatsoever, right? And the reality is that Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg are both smart enough to know that they didn't have a chance in hell, right? They looked at it, they looked at the landscape, and they saw that whether they pulled out or not, like, this delegate count would have looked slightly different. As opposed, like, you know, Bloomberg had 61, Warren had 64,
Klobuchar
had seven, you know, right. Buttigieg had six. So after Super Tuesday, you know, even if they stay in, you know, maybe Klobuchar has 20, maybe Buttigieg has in the 20s again. Like, there was no path to victory for them after South Carolina.
Did you see where Trump said, there's a quid pro quo here, maybe Buttigieg should be impeached? Did you see that he said that? No. He did say that. He's become ramble to the ignorant masses guy. Granted, he's always been that, but now it's become almost like a weekly town hall where he just says the shit that people want to hear. Back to the Idiocracy card, dude. It's getting worse.
I really, I'm not even focused on him right now. Like, okay. I mean, I'm not, because he doesn't, right now, he doesn't like the fact that the spotlight's not on him. Right, like, so that's why he's doing it everywhere. Like, you know, everywhere that there is a Democratic primary, he's gonna have a rally. You know, he wanted to make sure he had a televised rally going on Super Tuesday. You know, like, he can't stand not being in the limelight. Now, part of that is part of their plan as a campaign, right? Like, so that he's not forgotten, he's got to make sure that he's getting his voice out there. You know, like, so that people remember to go out and vote for him. He's going to win, you know, 98% of the votes in every right. state as a Republican, because right. there's very few people running against him in these things. But he's in campaign mode, and campaign Trump is going to say whatever he needs to do to get attention from his base. Right? We know what that is. We've already seen that show. So none of it is, it's not a surprise. Now it's not, to me, it's not something that we need to talk about
all right.
every week, because we know his shtick at this yep. point,
and
right?
It's in full
right. shtick mode. It's in, and so there's, it's just like, it's beating a dead horse to a degree. So you move on past him, and, you know, but going back to what you said, you know, I just think that I want to give Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg credit for being smart enough to recognize that there wasn't a path to victory. The idea of a brokered convention, the media loves that idea, right? People who cover presidential campaigns in this season, you know, election season, they love the idea of brokered convention. Ooh, what's going to happen? There's so much drama,
right?
Right? Like, this is political reality TV. But the reality is that chances are you weren't going to have that, right? I mean, you're probably going to have a clear winner. It's probably going to be Biden at this point. And so they're able to see it, right? The pressure from the DNC really, yeah, the DNC did it. And yeah, the DNC can't stop stepping on their own dick. But I'm not saying, I don't think that Klobuchar and Buttigieg pulled out because of DNC pressure. And then people turned around and voted because those two people endorsed Biden.
Okay, well, I do think they were pressured to drop out before Super Tuesday. I mean, they dropped out on Monday, right?
Yeah.
So it was right before. I mean, they'd already done the campaigning. They'd already spent the money. If they were serious about a presidential campaign for themselves, that's not the time to quit unless you want to shift the balance of effort, of energy. And I really think the DNC has a flat-out hatred for Bernie Sanders. I think they're – or I think really fear
okay,
of.
Hold on. Multiple things can be true at once, right? That's true. Something that I have to say all the time. All of those things probably did happen, right? The DNC probably did pressure them and say, get the fuck out, right? The DNC does not like Bernie. We know that, right? But I also think that, again, Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg can act independently and recognize from a strategic standpoint, they're not doing the party any good. They're not doing themselves any good. Like, there's certain people who are just, like Tulsi Gabbard, I'm just going to stay in because I need to be in here and my voice needs to be heard. Bitch, shut the fuck up. No one cares.
I care.
Right?
Like, I care, Tulsi.
Congratulations. But no one fucking cares. Right? You do whatever the fuck you want. Like, honestly, do whatever you want. Right? Like, you have two delegates. Right? Like, this whole thing isn't going to come down to your two delegates.
She got 7% in one of the states.
Okay. But all I'm saying is she doesn't matter. And neither did Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg. As much as people really wanted them to matter, I did. I'm an Amy Klobuchar fan. She was a person that I was hoping would come out in this and would be a surprise dark horse and rise up, but she didn't. Right? And unfortunately, this is politics. Right? Like, this is politics and this is how the game is really played. You can have all these idealistic ideas on how it's supposed to happen, what you really want, right, and money shouldn't be involved, and people shouldn't vote because of this, and they need to vote with based on policy and not just because someone looks better than the other person. That ain't how it fucking works. Okay, so the reality is that the base and the machine are behind Biden. Nobody likes Bernie.
Right.
Right. Like, the Democratic Party doesn't like Bernie, and the people who like Bernie, unfortunately, didn't come out and vote for Bernie. Right. Like, so you've got this crowd of 18 to 29. Those are his biggest supporters, but their numbers dropped in terms of their percentage that came out to vote. Right. Now, people, you know, the people who support Bernie will say, well, it's not their fault. They had to choose between working and voting, and they couldn't give up the money because if not, they were going to die. Right? Like, you know, like, oh, I had no choice. Otherwise, the coffee shop was going to fire me and I was going to lose my benefits and my dad was going to die of cancer. Right? Like, that, they're throwing this whole thing at you. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's probably true for about less than 1% of that age demographic. And for the rest of them, they just don't give a shit. They don't care enough to vote. That age demographic has never come out to vote in strong numbers. And because of it, that's hurting Bernie. Those are the people who are the loudest on social media who support him, but unfortunately their numbers don't translate from social media to the real world. And that's the problem with Bernie's supporter and him getting into the White House, or at least in getting in position to be the lead candidate for the Democrats in the general election to get into the White House.
The numbers support your statement. The difference is that they're incredibly vocal. This isn't like Clinton versus Bush, where that demographic just didn't give a shit. They're very passionate, very loud, very whatever, when they're in the coffee shop or in the bar. But when it comes to making the time to go to the voting booth, most of them don't show up. And let me be clear. I'll say this up early on. I have never been more disillusioned as a Democrat in my life. Frankly, the two choices we have serious flaws. The way we're getting to them is very frustrating. I have serious concerns about Joe Biden's mental health. I think we'll probably talk about that more later. At least I'd like to. But that genuinely concerns me. And I've admitted, having been a Biden fan most of his career, I did like him as a VP choice. I liked him in 88, even though I wasn't old enough to vote. But I'm watching him now, and he's just a disaster. I mean, he says something stupid. And what he does that really scares me is one time you hear him talk, he sounds lucid, he sounds sharp, he sounds like a wise old man, whatever. And the next time, he says completely bizarre, bumbling bullshit. I mean, he was in South Carolina campaigning and said, I want your vote for senator. He said that.
I know.
And yikes. He said 150 million people have been killed in gun violence. I don't know over what period of time he was suggesting, but even if it was in the history of guns, that number is not true. So it's...
What's crazy is he's also the youngest between Bernie, Trump, and himself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, you gotta be shitting me. This is.
I was happening. Out with a girl last night, and I was like, she's like, I can't believe you have to choose between two old white, you know, the Democratic Party is the party of diversity, and we're still choosing between two white men. And she went, well, really three. And I'm like, who's the other? Oh, yeah, Trump. Two old white men, sorry. So Michael Bloomberg dropped out, as you mentioned, spending $500 million. Mm. And real quick, the MSNBC thing with Brian Williams, where Brian Williams quoted a tweet where he said, some idiot tweeted that with $500 million and America's population being 327 million, Michael Bloomberg could have instead given every citizen $1 million. MSNBC put that tweet up there as if it was fact.
Well, they put it up there, and then Brian Williams says, yeah, and then this. And he's like, stay with me now for all you guys getting ahead doing the math. And so I did the math, and I'm not a math. I'm not, listen, I wasn't a math lead by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm just like, oh boy. Like, and I was hoping that they were going to make fun of the tweet, but no, they quoted it and just like, yeah, see, everybody in America could have been a millionaire. And it's just like,
actually, you give everyone in America $1.53.
Right. And what's scary is then you have the editors from the New York Times who jumps in, and she's just like, yes, isn't it just amazing the amount of money he was just willing to waste? I mean, every American could have had $1 million. Like, bitch, do you have any concept of money? No, you don't. And I think it was one of those things where no one really paid attention to the tweet, which is, again, terrifying. Now, this is MSNBC and not CNN, because this is something that CNN would totally do. But this, again, like, you got to pay attention, right? Like, someone has to bust out a calculator real quick and say, hey, guys, it's more of a one-for-one, not one times a million like he would have needed.
So they're off by $999,998.47. You're going to hold that against him? Per person. You're going to hold that against him?
I mean, he would have had to have spent, what, $500 billion to give everybody a million?
You know what? I'm going to not fuck it up to do the math, but yeah, that's probably right.
Or $5 billion to give everybody a million?
Let's not do this. let's not do math without doing math. And but anyway, yeah, that was hilarious. But one thing that was interesting, so I was watching Super Tuesday coverage on CNN, and they had Andrew Yang as an analyst, which, good for him. I like Andrew Yang. He's a logical, smart guy, which makes him completely unpresidential. But he was talking about the Bloomberg apparatus. And it was really interesting because he was in awe of the technology that the Bloomberg team uses. Now, obviously, they missed the boat with their message. But and I called that from the beginning. I'm like, yeah, he's putting all this money out there. He's putting all these ads out there. But the things he's spewing don't translate in the places he's spewing them. I took on Fair. The NRA does not win you votes in Arkansas and Tennessee and South Carolina or North Carolina. It just doesn't. In fact, it turns people off. An overreaching government does not win points. And I think this is purely an example of Bloomberg being the ultimate East Coast elitist who sees things through his lens and cannot translate to what it's like to live in a small town in Tennessee. He don't get it. And I've spent plenty of time on the East Coast. I've lived on the East Coast. You've spent plenty of time on the East Coast. You run into people out there who are just unable to see the world through anything other than their perspective. Wow. Okay. All right, something's going on. We have breaking news, apparently. You're very distracted.
Because I was trying to figure out how much money how much money you would need to give everybody in America $1 million. Right, so there's 350 people in the 350 million people in the country, and so in order to give us all $1 million, you would need $350 trillion.
Okay, I say that Holy number. God. That number didn't add up when you said it. And that's why I didn't want to get caught in the math because I'm not in math mode right now. But anyway, so I think that when people say money, this proves money doesn't matter. Bullshit. It didn't prove that. It proved that Mike Bloomberg is completely out of touch. But back to my point about Yang. When you impress Andrew Yang with technology and you're data gathering and your whatever, that impresses me.
Okay. Well, you have it ass backwards.
Okay.
First of all, why is Mike Bloomberg worth $60 billion?
Data acquisition in large part. Yeah.
So what do you think he was using to gather that data?
No, but Yang was gushing over
my question.
What was the question?
What was Bloomberg using to gather the data for Bloomberg TV and the Bloomberg terminal that stuff?
Same apparatus.
Okay. So it's the idea, it impressed Andrew Yang. Who the fuck are you? Andrew Yang is worth the pocket change that falls out of his Bloomberg shorts from 10 years ago.
He was talking about just how well streamlined they were, how organized they were. And his real point was, when it comes to downstream elections and supporting the Democratic candidate, that it's going to be a useful apparatus. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. I understand. But the idea that it impresses Andrew Yang doesn't impress me.
All
right. Right? Like, Michael Bloomberg, what impresses me is Michael Bloomberg taking this technology that, again, has amassed him billions and billions of dollars and probably could amass him more if he really, really wanted it to. And then turning it, like, no shit that it's going to have the effect that it has, right? Like, yeah, he didn't put out the right message. And yeah, he did it wrong. But I think part of it was a lot of what was going on with him. I still think that he could have, it could have been more effective. There are multiple reports now coming out that there were a lot of people working on his campaign that literally were just doing it for the money, and they turned on him pretty quick because he's a billionaire and I guess he's a dick. They turned on him pretty quick, and they weren't getting his message out in the street. There were people who were openly campaigning for Bernie, like getting paid by Bloomberg to campaign for Bloomberg, and they were campaigning for Bernie. And like there are multiple reports of this. There was a Vox piece, there was a Guardian piece, there was a piece in the New York Times. So his campaign fell apart pretty quick, and I think he also threw it together pretty quickly as well. So yeah, there was some bad messaging on his part on a higher level, but I still think that he was undermined. He ended up being, I don't still think this, but what we found out is that he ended up being undermined by his lower level people, where Bernie's people were completely faithful to Bernie. Right, like, so if you would have taken the Bloomberg apparatus and you would have if you were to give the Bloomberg apparatus to Bernie, then all of a sudden Bernie's numbers are probably going to look a whole hell of a lot better, right? If you've got people that are truly believe, or if just the people working for Bloomberg actually liked him enough to actually campaign for him, right, and kind of do more of the groundwork, then I think Bloomberg's numbers look a lot better. Still not, he still wouldn't have done what I think a lot of people were hoping that he would do and overtake Biden or Bernie and be one of the top choices. But I think the apparatus that he has and the data and the ability to tap into the social networks and use the internet and fund it, what's crazy about it is all that shit is cheaper than the TV ads and the radio ads.
Yeah.
Right? Like doing stuff on all the different social media platforms, you can get 10 times the amount of exposure. You can get 10 times the bang for your buck using Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all those things and the texting and the emails and all that stuff because TV ads are so expensive. Now, the good thing about TV ads is that so many people still watch TV, right? Even everybody's unplugging.
And you couldn't open a YouTube video without a Mike Bloomberg ad popping up. That was annoying as fuck. At some point, there's diminishing returns, right? At some point, like, okay, I've seen this commercial 10 fucking times, and I'm watching a half an hour TV show. At some point, you get annoyed by them, or at least I do. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah,
maybe
you probably do. But again, the whole point is to get it drilled in your head, right? You have a lot of commercials out there that you see and you remember the commercials, but you don't remember what the name of the commercial. It's just like, hey, remember that commercial with the guy doing this and
that?
What was the commercial for? Well, was that commercial effective? Like, you remember the commercial, but you don't remember it for. But all the progressive commercials, you remember Flo and Jamie, and you remember the car insurance amusement park was for Progressive, right? Like, that's good advertising because you remember the name Progressive, right? As annoying as the commercials are, you see, people in Cleveland complain all the time about Baker Mayfield and his commercials, but they know that all his commercials are for what? Progressive,
right?
I mean, as annoying as they are, you know the name Progressive, and at the end of the day, when you're going and you need a new car insurance company and you're going from State Farm because you're tired of Jake, then you're probably going to jump over to Progressive, even though they have a ton of annoying commercials. Same thing with Bloomberg, right? Like, yeah, you're annoyed, but if it's a question of who do I go to, I really don't like Bernie because I don't want to do the socialist thing, and, you know, Biden's a bumbling idiot, there's Bloomberg, and you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to go to Gabbard, you're not going to go to, you know, one of these other names. The whole point was flood the market, get the name stuck in people's heads, and force them to make a decision to remember you.
Well, it didn't work.
No, it didn't.
And one of my biggest concerns was that the Democrats were going to shit all over Mike Bloomberg to the point where he said, you know what? I had said, I'm all in on burning Trump, but I'm not doing this for you guys anymore. Fuck it. I'm running as a third party guy. And that would have been a disaster, in my opinion, especially for Democrats. Now, it didn't happen. He's been true to his word so far. Seems like he's still going to invest his $2 billion to stopping Trump. I think you said a couple weeks ago that Bloomberg hates Trump because Trump pretends to be what Bloomberg actually is.
Yes.
And I think you're 100% right, but I want to add something to that. Can you imagine the amount of money and stuff and how lavish some of the parties these guys go to have to be ridiculous. And Mike Bloomberg is sitting there eating steak tartare with French champagne at $250 a bottle, whatever. And what's Trump doing? Mowing down a bucket of KFC. And, I mean, just, in addition to the fact that he's pretending to be part of this elite crowd when he really doesn't deserve to be there, and he's been doing that for decades.
No, that's not true. I mean, Trump is still like
he's rich. He's really rich.
Right. I mean, he's
but he's not Bloomberg rich.
Or no, even close. But I mean, no one is. But few people, I mean, yeah. You know what I mean? Like
outside of Saudi Arabia, not many.
Right. I mean, like Bloomberg's one of the top five. Like he's the top five richest people in the world.
I think it was nine, but either way, he's way up there. Dude's fabulous wealthy.
Okay,
but I agree.
But the point is, I mean, like Trump's worth $3 billion. Right, and Bloomberg's.
I doubt it. I think he's a 60
cares. Bloomberg's own analysis says Trump is worth $3 billion.
Okay, I didn't know.
I'm
that.
Sorry, I trust Bloomberg over you on this.
Okay.
Okay.
That apparatus that you were just. Never mind. Okay.
That right. Whole point. But the point being is that $3 billion is a fuck ton of money.
It is, huh?
Right? And Bloomberg has $59 billion more.
Right.
So I think you're right to a degree where, like, I still think my premise is right. Like, Bloomberg is like, you are not rich like me, right? Like, I can do whatever I want. Like, I can put my name on a TV network. I can buy not just one plane. I can have fleets of planes, right? I can have multiple planes in multiple countries on multiple continents, right? Like, you can't fuck with me. Do not tell me about what it is to be rich. Matter of fact, I'm going to spend your net worth on a campaign that I don't give a fuck if I win or not. And if I don't win, I'm going to still spend that money to get somebody else elected over you, just to spite you and your measly $3 billion. Go fuck yourself.
All right. Well, I'm agreeing with you. Somehow we're... not agreeing to agree, or I don't even know
what are you talking about?
That I'm agreeing with you that Bloomberg's hatred for Trump is forcing his way into a scene that he can't stand, and being a boorish jerk, I'm sure, also adds to that. The one real serious thing that came out of Super Tuesday, though, is some of the polls in Texas stayed open until like 2 a.m. Eastern time, and I know because I was still on my couch with Manhattan in hand at 2 in the morning watching CNN's coverage, and... shockingly, the places that had a terrible ability to handle voting volume were in rich white suburban neighborhoods. Oh, no, they were not.
Mm.
They were in largely lower income minority neighborhoods. And this smacks of the same kind of voter suppression that I believe won Bush the White House in 2000. Maybe the most insidious thing going on in American politics that gets almost no real attention is... affecting the ability of people to vote in the first place. If you were talking earlier about the millennials not wanting to take the time away from their shift to lose out on the money, so that's why they're not going to the polls for Bernie. Well, think about the people in those communities who are spending 7 hours in line. I wouldn't spend 7 hours in line for a chance to make out with Katy Perry. That's a lie. But...
Katy Perry is pregnant,
I know, and Orlando Bloom knocked her up. But that's probably why she was on my mind. But my point is, to have the strength and dedication to wait in line for 7 fucking hours to vote in a primary is two things. It one shows resilience, but it also shows that they have found a way to funnel the ability to vote away from those communities, and I do not believe for a second it's an accident, and either do you.
it's not an accident. I mean, once they gutted the Voting Rights Act, what that allowed to do are these states, especially in the South, but everywhere, to do things with voting polls and times that definitely hurt certain groups and certain populations, but now they can do it with impunity. Before, if a state like Texas wanted to change any of their voting rules, any of that stuff, it had to go under federal review.
Right.
Right. It's just like, listen, you guys have a bad... And the whole point of the Voting Rights Act was you had these states that were bad actors that intentionally did things to prevent black people from voting. Right? Like that.
Right.
Like they would poll taxes, and they didn't open polls. They would close them. They would move them. Intimidation. All these sort of things. Right?
Published dates that were wrong.
All this sort of stuff. Like when they talk about voter suppression, that's what it was. So they institute the Voting Rights Act in 1965. And so what that did was it said, like, listen, if you want to change anything about how people vote, it needs to come to us, the federal government, to look at before you do it. We'll either give you a yes, you can do it, or no, you can't, right? And most of the time, it was no, you can't, because what they were trying to do was something that would hurt the black or minority population, especially the Democrats, it would hurt them in those southern states. So they said, nope, you can't do that. You can't do that. Well, they go through. Did they overturn the Voting Rights Act? No, but they basically, essentially, our Supreme Court said, yeah, well, it used to be necessary, but it's not as necessary now. But, you know, basically, you guys use your best judgment going forward. So as soon as the Supreme Court does that, these states like Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, the states down south, they immediately start with their shenanigans on closing polling stations in black and minority neighborhoods. And people are just like, no, they didn't do it in black and minority neighborhoods. They just did it in poor neighborhoods. Well, down south, those are black and minority neighborhoods.
Right.
Predominantly. Right? Like, are there poor people? Are there poor white people caught up in this? Yes. But that's a risk that these governments and the powers that be are willing to take. Well, it's going to affect a few white people, but it's mostly going to impact the black people, and those people are going to vote Democrat. So as long as we disenfranchise them, right, as long as we remove their ability to vote or make it so difficult that they opt to not vote, then we've achieved our goal. And there's no one there to check them anymore. So all we can do is see it on the news and hope that people have the resilience that the people in Texas had to stay in line and do what they have to do and vote, and then hopefully vote in people who will change this bullshit that they have going on.
My polling place changed. I got a letter in the mail, and I saw it, and I was like, oh, Board of Elections. And I just opened it because it said that, but didn't expect anything, and it informed me that my polling place had changed. So the only way I know that is I happen to pay attention to my mail, because often it goes straight into the recycle.
Well, I don't know, but what do you want to do? Like, I mean, like... They mailed it to you. Like,
yeah,
like,
no, fair enough. I mean, they can't knock on my door.
Like,
and
what do you want them to do? Like, no, come and wait until they...
Fair, but the fact that it changed my... And I wish I had the letter in front of me. I didn't think about it before the show. But, you know, the neighborhood I'm in... Eh,
where did it change to?
Someplace... You want me to... Hold on. All right, so we're back. My place is moving by about a mile. It just... Again... Timing, whatever.
I don't think this is
not voter suppression.
This is not voter suppression. Right?
It's a one-time thing.
Where you vote, because I used to vote where you vote, and it's an older church.
Right.
I'm willing to bet that they're probably under construction right now or something along those lines, and it doesn't, like, there's some concern about people going to vote there. They've only moved it a mile, and, like, yes, it's a mile further for all the people who, you know, depending on where they are, but... That's not the same thing that's happening down in Texas. Like, down in Texas, they were closing places where people went from being 15 to 20 minutes away from a polling place to an hour, right? Like, massive.
And getting rid of polling places. So,
right.
You know, this used to serve 50,000 people. Now it serves 250,000 people.
Right. Increased lines, increased times. Right. Like, that's not what's going on here. And, like, your place is on Rocky River Drive, it's still along a main line.
True.
Right? Like, so public transportation and all that stuff. Like, true. I mean, like, so it's not overly impacted
All right, so I'm not part of this voter suppression.
No.
But the voter suppression thing is very real.
It is very real.
It does not get nearly enough attention. This is something that is, I mean, again, I blame the 2000 election for Bush largely on that. And in 2004, I remember voting in... Mason, Ohio, which is a wealthy suburb of Cincinnati, and being in and out of there in 20 minutes, despite getting there at 6 p.m., which should be prime voting time, and getting in the wrong line initially. Meanwhile, in Columbus, Ohio, downtown Columbus, there were lines that were 4 and 5 hours, and they had to, you know, petition to allow polls to stay open. So this shit's been going on for 20 years now, actually a whole hell of a lot more, and it gets very little attention. And this is what people
I don't think that it gets very little attention, but the problem is that there aren't great mechanisms to fix it, right? The mechanisms that we had were already not great, and then they've been stripped. So what you would need is a better balance in your local and state governments to prevent this from happening, but you don't have that. So there are people who ring the alarm about voter suppression every time that there's an election. You know,
it gets almost no attention.
It's not true. It is covered by all the. I mean, like, the story about Texas was covered by every major media outlet, right? Like, before, like, as it was happening and after. But the problem is, how do you fix it? That was weird. What you just did, the whole zipper thing.
I
get it.
All right,
but I mean, because the mics pick up the sound. It was just weird to watch.
Okay,
but. In terms of the voter suppression thing, it does get covered. You can go on Google right now, and you'll probably pull up 30 stories about voter suppression, and they'll target specifically in Texas the same thing that you saw and the same thing that I saw and we tweeted about. But how do you fix it, right? The states are the ones that are doing it, and your mechanism to fix it was the federal government, and the Supreme Court basically said federal government doesn't give a shit anymore.
And that's what I would like to see Bernie and Biden campaigning on.
What are they going to do?
When if they say, if I become president, this shit will get fixed.
How?
Well, fine. If you're the one who's saying that, you know, Bernie is saying that he's going to fix Medicare, make Medicare for all, and that's undoable, blah, blah, blah. If Medicare is something you're willing to put your name on, why the hell wouldn't you put your name on this?
First of all, I don't understand why I'm being yelled at. I don't know what the fuck you want. I'm not talking to fucking Bernie.
All right. Well, fine. Okay, I'm not yelling at you. I'm not yelling at you.
He's the white knight in all this, right? I mean, like, he's coming with the thunder to fix all the things.
This was the generic you, not you personally.
I get it. But, I mean, I think, again, that kind of goes to some of my issue with Bernie. Like, some of the stuff is not something that you can do with an executive order, right? I mean, like, the whole voting rights issue. Like, you can't, like, even Trump right now can't go in and say, Texas, fix your voting thing. You got to open more polls and blah, blah, blah. That's not something he has the power to do. You would need that law to be basically reinstituted. You'd have to go back through Congress and, you have to skirt around what's already been established law because the Supreme Court has basically gone through and said, what doesn't have to happen. So, I mean, like, that's a complicated issue. Like, what you need are people elected in the state who actually don't want to suppress votes.
Right, well, right.
You know, and like, fixes it.
Okay.
But clearly Texas doesn't have that
Is there anything you and I can do? Like, I know you can drive people to polling places. It is legal for you to pick someone up at their home and drive them to polling places. I may well do that in this election. I won't do it for the primary, but I will reach out to the Democratic headquarters in Cuyahoga County and see if I can do that. We're going to bounce around to Biden again, I'm sure, because the investigation into Hunter Biden is back in front of the Senate. But speaking of the Senate, let's talk about Chuck Schumer for a minute, because Chuck Schumer annoyed the absolute fuck out of me this week when he personally went on a tirade towards Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh, the two Trump Supreme Court nominees, and said, basically, if you keep messing with reproductive rights, you're going to... I forget what he said. You're going to pay a price. All right. Chuck, you are aware that they're appointed for life. They are not going to pay a price.
He said that they were going to pay a political price.
And no, they won't.
Right. Like, no, they're not going to pay a political price. It sounded bad. It didn't make sense. And Trump immediately jumped on it and said that it was a threat. And that this was, you know, unhinged Democrats, and, you know, immediately he plays right into Trump's hands with this. And I've not really been a fan of Chuck Schumer, and this is why the dude, like, he goes up there and puts on a show every time he gives a speech on the floor, and he wants to lecture people, and it's just like you got sucked into the most obvious trap of all time, but yet no one even had to set it. You set yourself up.
And in my opinion, Democrats need to stop acting like taking away guns and keeping abortion legal is their main cause. No one's happy about an abortion. No one. The fact that women have reproductive rights to do what they have to do, I support that. I still think the whole process is very sad, and depending on how it goes down, can be gross. And again, we're two dudes. We're never going to have one, so we typically stay away from it. But banging the drum like this is such a wonderful thing is fundamentally flawed, in my opinion. It's not a happy moment that we... It's unlike the right to vote, which is something that should be defended and celebrated. This is not what we should be rallying around, in my opinion.
Which is... You know, I stay away from abortion on this show for a reason. I think that for certain ears, what you just said sounds really bad.
I'm sorry. I'll piss me off. I'm fine with it.
And I'm not comfortable inserting myself into this fight at all, because I just don't think I have a good place in it. My only thing is I don't want people hurt. I don't want women forced to do something, you know, on, you know, in dark alleys. I don't want them doing dangerous things that are going to cost them their lives. I don't want them to have to make these awful, terrible decisions, you know, where it's either my life or the baby. You know, I mean, I want it to be safe for them, right. But I'm not inserting myself, and I just don't have the place to do it. I don't. You know, so, but in terms of should it be the cornerstone of the Democratic, you know,
agenda?
Agenda. I mean, it's pretty important to a big portion of your base, right? So I think having it as a cornerstone, I don't have an issue with it, but I do have an issue with the way Chuck Schumer went about it, right? Like, I think there's an intelligent way to have a conversation about abortion. I think there's an intelligent way to design campaigns around the issue, right? Like, so that it's in the forefront. If it's that important to your group, your base, your constituents, the people voting, but Chuck Schumer didn't do that, right? He didn't do it the right way, because he probably should not be the one that's championing this. Now, I will also say Alyssa Milano is probably not the right person either, right?
I didn't hear what you said.
She just runs her mouth all the time, right? Because she was on a TV show, so we should listen to her, right? I mean, I'm sorry, Alyssa Milano. I don't give a fuck what you think, right? Like, I just don't. You know, on something like that, I'm gonna follow Nancy Pelosi's lead, right? I'll listen to what AOC has to say on the issue, because I just, as a man, I should not be the one putting myself. And if you are a guy putting yourself in the front of the abortion fight, you know, taking these large stands, and I'm sorry, I'm calling you on your bullshit, because you're not, you're doing it out of a place to make yourself feel better, right? You're not doing it for the right reasons. You're doing it because it makes you feel better about supporting someone else who you think needs your help. What you need to do is actually support them, whatever that calls for, but you need to be told what to do, right? This is not something where you need to take the lead. Ladies, I got this. I got you. I'm going to stand up here and run my mouth in front of the, like, no, you don't, Chuck, no, you're good. Let somebody else handle that. You, whatever needs to be done in the background, you do it, right? Like, they don't need your voice, right? They need your action. And so I think for men, with this whole abortion issue, whatever support, however you feel about it, you support in the background, and you let the ladies take the lead on this. That's how I feel about it. Okay. And then his whole thing of threatening Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and all this other shit, like, That's just bad strategics, right? Or bad strategy, and you fall right into Trump and the whole Trump machine, where they can say you're being dangerous and derailed and you're threatening, and this is what the Democrats do, and then they'll cut to a scene of Antifa beating up some old man, and it's just like, well, all these things are separate. Like, okay, but you laid the framework for them to do it. You put yourself right in harm's way, or right in the bullseye. And I can't get you out of it. I'm not going to apologize for you being a fucking idiot.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm just calling Chuck Schumer an idiot. You dislike him more than I do. But when I hear him literally threatening, let's go with the positives and say he was just threatening their careers. Their careers are pretty much set. Lifetime appointments do that, Chuck. Shut the fuck up. We also learned that Mick Mulvaney is no longer President Trump's chief of staff. He is now...
Well, to be fair, he was an acting chief of staff, right? He was there. He was replacing John Kelly, who John Kelly was, you know, a general and was one of those military men that we figured would help guide Trump from doing really stupid things, until he got fed up with Trump doing really stupid things.
Right.
And, you know, he jumped ship. So the president taps this, you know, boob of a guy, Mick Mulvaney. Mulvaney basically crumbles under pressure, you know, during the whole impeachment thing. And he's like, yeah. So what? There was a, you know, quid pro quo. So what? Whatever. And so now everybody realizes that Mulvaney probably isn't the guy for this position. So they ended up making him the special envoy to Northern Ireland.
I'm calling that a demotion. You're right. He was only the acting. He was never officially named. And when you're in the acting role for a long period of time, it's because they don't think you're the person for the job. And so I agree. It's really not that big a deal in terms of it's not some political assassination. It's not like what he did to Vindman, where, you know, marching him out of his office to make a scene.
His twin brother. We're not sure which one is which. Fuck them both. Get them both out of here.
It is not that, but it did happen, and I just wanted to get it out there. I agree in the grand scheme. It's really a minor issue.
And he replaced him with Mark Meadows, and Mark Meadows has been a Trump surrogate almost from the get-go.
Congressman from North Carolina, is that right?
Yeah, he's a Republican congressman out of North Carolina. He was a huge, you know, Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan, you know, Jim Jordan being an Ohio guy. These two were the ones saying the most ridiculous things during the impeachment about, you know, like, well, if you don't have a handwritten note from Donald Trump with a voice and video recording of him saying X, Y, and Z, then I don't know why we're even here. Right? Like, that was kind of their whole position on this whole thing. So I think what happens is Trump loves it when people stroke his ego. Mark Meadows has been stroking Trump's ego for the last however many years. This is Trump's reward to him. Let me take you out of a position where you have to worry about being voted. You know, you have to worry about votes and campaigns and all that other stuff. You just come here and be the guy. Yeah. You know, be the guy who props up my nutsack at night, and, you know, I'll take care of you. And Mark Meadows happily obliged. Mick Mulvaney gets his cushy job in Ireland, and, you know,
right.
As long as Ireland and Northern Ireland don't go back to war, then Mulvaney is in a good position. Right?
As a special envoy to North Ireland.
Right. Now listen,
it's probably a hell of a gig, actually.
It's probably a hell of a gig, but there is some concern. There are a lot of questions. What happens with Northern Ireland and Ireland with this whole Brexit deal? You know, does that relationship start to fray? Do you go back to car bombings every other week and everything that was going on there? Most people say the answer is probably not, but there's a little bit of a concern. So this could turn out to be one of those deals where you thought you were getting a cushy landing and, you know, you end up in a war zone, but we'll see.
We'll see. You want to get off of national politics for a minute? Because there was an execution in Alabama yesterday. A man named Nathaniel Woods, who was convicted as an accomplice in a triple murder where three Birmingham police officers entered what was believed to be a drug house, were shot by a different man than Nathaniel Woods. I saw his name earlier. I can't remember it. That man was convicted of capital murder and is on death row, but is still alive. Nathaniel Woods had nothing to do with pulling the trigger. The accusation was that he lured police into the firing zone. There was apparently a pretty violent, obviously violent, but a long gunfight, and three officers killed, one wounded. I don't know what his actual role was, but I do know that it's a little off-putting when the guy who pulled the trigger is alive and the guy who allegedly helped set it up is dead, and the governor of Alabama, was reached out to by Doug Jones, senator from Alabama, as well as activists, including Martin Luther King III and Kim Kardashian. And she basically said, yeah, it was lawful, so we're going to go ahead and do it because justice has to be served. There seem to be a lot of questions, and this is why I'm so anti-death penalty, because when there's a lot of questions about both actual events and the legal proceedings, once you execute someone, you can't fix it. As tough as it is to get an appeal to overturn a trial conviction, it's impossible to overturn an execution. And this sounds like a real sketchy one that just shows how fucked up our death penalty is.
You know, it was a state execution, and you're in Alabama. He was black, and like down south, they don't really kind of dick around, right? Like if you're on death row and you're black in the South, like it is a 99.9% kill rate, right? Like it's just getting it overturned is next to impossible. No matter who the governor is, no matter which of these states south of the Mason-Dixon line, like it's just not a place that you want to be. You're fighting an uphill battle where the hill is covered in grease and there's a boulder coming at you that's on fire, you know, while you've got two hands tied behind your back. Like, you're just, it's not a hill that you want to climb. This is the death penalty in America. That's what it is. And so it's hard. Like, I mean, having worked on an Innocence Project and, you know, knowing what this fight is, it's mentally and emotionally exhausting. Just working on it, right? Like, sure. working to get a person that appeal, working to, you know, get something seen by someone, you know, working to get evidence and you know, working against, you know, local police who may or may not have something to hide. Like, it drains the shit out of you. And on the other end, for the person that is sitting in that cell who's literally fighting for their life, I can only imagine how exhausting it is. So when these stories come up, it's not, like, for me, it sucks. But I look at this, and as much as people were upset about it, I was like, this guy's getting executed. Right? And it's not because I think that he's guilty. It's not that I believe that he's guilty. I believe that he's innocent. I believe that he should have faced a 10-year sentence or something like that and got out. But felony murder, like, I hate the felony murder rule, because I think it so unfairly ensnares people, and it's not a deterrent. It doesn't work. It just ruins and ends lives on so many different levels. And in this sort of situation, they're saying he was an accomplice to a crime where three officers were killed.
Right. And by the way, the gunman said, "I acted alone."
Yes.
You don't get that very often. You don't very often get the person who did. We know he didn't pull the trigger, meaning Nathaniel Woods. We know that the guy who did pull the trigger said, "I did this and I acted alone." I mean, I don't know if that happened, if that was said at trial.
Yeah, the problem is, I don't know the case. I don't know the case. I don't know what the evidence is. I don't know what the witness said. I don't know what's been, if anything had been recanted, if stories have changed. I don't know all the facts of the case. But the little that's out there, it was just like, there's no way that this is going to get overturned, right? Like there's no indicators that say this guy has a chance in hell of surviving it. Now, there was a brief pause, right? I think he was supposed to be killed, we'll say, at like 7 p.m. and it ended up happening at 9, something along those lines. You know, so that is the only thing that kind of gave me a little bit of hope for him. Was just like, well, maybe somebody was able to come through with what they needed, that magic bullet to kind of fix it for him. But they, you know, they ultimately ended up still executing him. And that, to me, it's not the desired result, but that's the expected result.
I'm not saying I was shocked.
So there's two sides of the coin. You don't want to not mention it just because you're jaded and you're not shocked.
Right.
It still needs to be put out there, and if you don't know, like, the reason why it's worth us telling you is so you do know that this sort of stuff is out there, and that you look for it and you see it, and you can at least understand what's behind it, and hopefully you have some empathy and emotion towards it, and think about that. So the next time you hear someone, you know, when voting season comes around, and you've got someone that says, "We're going to take a look at our death penalty," right, then that gives you reason to maybe look into voting for that person. Or if you just think that everybody should be executed who is anywhere near murder, then you're just like, fuck that guy. You know, I mean, whatever. I mean, at least at minimum, we want to give you the information and you figure out what to do with it.
And there are so many podcasts out there now that deal with innocence projects and true crime, and it's so much easier to get some of these stories out there. And I listen to them all the time. And so maybe that's why this is more on my radar now than it would have been 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. Because when you look, and I mean, you're a lawyer. This is not shocking to you. But most people think that the justice system works. If you're poor, it doesn't. I mean, you go on trial, there's no accountability to law enforcement or to prosecutors in terms of telling the truth. And I'm not going to bore everyone with all the cases. I recommend the Truth and Justice podcast all the time. I'll recommend it again. It's hosted by Bob Ruff, and there's case after case where you see what goes on behind the scenes, and it's gross. And it, you know, we talk about America being a place where you can get a fair trial. That's not true. And it's not true for everybody. If you got money, well, then you get all kinds of advantages. And again, if you turn me loose on OJ, you know what'll happen. So let's not do that. But
nobody said anything about OJ.
Well, but he had money. You did. I did, right. And if he didn't have money, then the police attempts to railroad him would have worked. I do think he did it. I also think the police planted evidence. And in the pie in the sky America that we talk about, the evidence of police tampering should make a person go free based on reasonable doubt. In OJ's case, it did. And if you ain't OJ rich or richer, it doesn't. Sorry, being boring maybe, but...
There's
more to again, it than that. There's a lot more to it.
Like, you have this obsession with OJ.
I do.
You know, having worked in the criminal justice system, I've seen a lot of people skip through that system. Like, yeah, a lot of people have gotten things that weren't fair, but I've also seen a lot of people who should have gone to jail for felonies, walk away with misdemeanors, not through jail time, when they're really bad guys or girls, right, who've done really shitty things, and the system comes down entirely too light. They go back in the street, and they do something even more horrific, and it just builds and builds and builds until you have a fucking monster, right? I've seen that. I've also seen people who should have never been in front of a judge who get way over-sentenced, overcharged, over-sentenced, and their lives ruined, right? Like, I've seen it, and so... My point is, the system is completely fucked.
Okay, right? I agree.
Like, there's no accountability. There's no consistency. But the only consistent thing is that poor minority people get the shit end of the stick in that system, one way or another, right? Because they're either getting overcharged and oversentenced, right? Or they're a family or they're a neighborhood with someone that shouldn't be on the street, right? Someone that is the equivalent to an actual monster. And they keeps getting chance after chance after chance after chance. And every time they come back, they get worse, they get worse, they get worse. And then someone else gets raped, someone else gets killed, someone else gets beaten, someone else gets robbed, right? And then it's just like, and people, there are people in some of these situations that are begging. They're like, listen, get this person, get these people out of here. We as a neighborhood, we as a village can't do anything for them. All they are doing is hurting us, and you keep putting them back on the street, making it not safe for us. What the fuck do you want us to do? Right? And that's where the criminal justice system is completely fucked, because you have that person that continues to go out there and commit crimes and terrorize people, right? That for whatever reason, keeps ending up on the street. But then you have people like Khalif Browder, who the kid's walking down the street with a book bag, and then ends up spending way more time in jail than he needs to, and ultimately ends up throwing himself out of a fucking window by an air conditioning cord, right? Like, that's the fucked up part of our criminal justice system, and it's a fucking mess. And so that's why I don't do criminal law anymore, right? Because the two ends, right, of it being so fucked up completely fucked with my head, right? Like, I'm actually in therapy right now, and one of the things that my therapist is working with me on is working through some of the shit that I experienced and I saw on a consistent basis, you know, as a public defender, that didn't make sense, that I couldn't wrap my head around, that forced me to self-medicate and cope in ways that were not healthy for me, right? Like, that's what it did. And I wasn't in there long enough. I wasn't a lifer, right? So imagine what it's doing to people who have worked in the system for life and have no idea what justice is anymore. Right, whether they're defenders or they're prosecutors or state's attorneys. Like, I mean, it does something to you, right? Just working in it. So imagine what it does being a person that's in and out of it, right? Like, you get plucked out of school, you get arrested when you're 6 years old, right? Which sets you on this life of crime. And how are we supposed to break people out of it? That's the fucked up part about this system. There's just so many extreme variables and so many extreme ends of it. That it's more than, like, I mean, people bring up OJ. I don't give a fuck about OJ. OJ kind of got his. He still ended up in jail. You know, he is who and what he is. OJ is in our criminal justice system. That's not the example, right? Like, I'll take you down to the Justice Center, downtown Cleveland, Chicago, any major city, and I'll show you the fucked up part of our justice system.
Well, I mean, another podcast I listen to that has me jaded is the Serial podcast, and they did, their third season was about the criminal justice system in Cleveland. And this is happening today in our city. And some of the shit that happened, a guy got arrested for weed and ended up spending 4 days in a closet with, like, a jug of milk to drink and nowhere to piss and shit. Our justice system is fucked, and unfortunately that does not get the attention and reform efforts that it needs. And I'm saying something that you already know, and I'm probably being boring and sounding like an entitled white guy, which to a large degree I am, but it really bothers me. And and this execution in Alabama is just a highlight of that. Anyway, man, we've been going for about an hour. You ready to shut it down?
There's one last thing I want to cover. Sorry. And it's, you know, the Tulsi Gabbard, the Warren thing. And a lot of people talking about, you know, more so with Warren. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard has some issues. And she didn't get a lot of traction for a number of reasons. But, I mean, I don't think it's because she's a woman. Right? Like, I mean, I just think she's
an obscure person.
Congresswoman
from Hawaii who's 38 right. years old.
Right. I mean, 38 years, and she's still a reservist, right? I mean, yep. she actually missed a debate because she was, she had to do her time on the weekends. So this is more towards Elizabeth Warren. In terms of sexism, yes. Sexism is part of the reason why she's not still in the race. I don't want to downplay that because, you know, Amy Klobuchar, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Gillibrand, like some of the standards that people are looking at in terms of what they're wearing, how different their clothes are. You know what I mean? Like as a guy, you can go up there, you can wear the same suit, you can wear the same tie. Nobody bats an eye. Nobody gives a shit. You know what I mean? The biggest thing for men, you know, Andrew Yang decided not to wear a tie to a debate and people were like, oh, he didn't wear a tie. Well, I don't know. I mean, blah, 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 blah. But I mean, for the most part, you wear a suit, you wear a dark suit. You know what I mean? You wear a white shirt and you wear a tie that's not too crazy and you're fine. No one really gives a shit. And like a lot of these guys look like shit, right? Like they're not healthy. They don't take care of themselves. Right.
Are you suggesting that Bernie Sanders is not there?
Bernie Sanders is bent over and yelling at people. He looks like a mad scientist spitting all over the mic. And you're just like, this is the guy that is going to be the president of the United States. You know, Joe Biden. I mean, Joe Biden, you know, actually looks like he's relatively healthy physically anyway, you know, given his age. But I mean, the rest of these guys, they look how they look and no one cares about how they look. Right. I mean, Chris Christie, a dude looks like he's constantly looking for a hot dog and he looks like he's constantly got gas. And yet, I mean, like he was a serious candidate for the president of the United States for an extended period of time. And then even still, he was still being considered for, you know.
How about Trump? Trump right, was a tie below his nutsack.
Right.
He gets made fun of for it by us.
Yeah,
and others.
Trump is a complete physical disaster. Bill Clinton, I mean, there were tons of jokes about him in cheeseburgers and stuff until he basically had a heart attack and had to lose weight while he was president. So, I mean, and Hillary got this. And so this happens with women all the time. And in even their demeanor, right? It's just like a woman, like, if a woman raises her voice or if she reacts in a certain way, it's just, oh, she's a bitch. She's this, she's that. And all those things are true, right? Like, they're all true. Okay. But with Elizabeth Warren, there were warts. People are acting like there weren't issues with her. That whole thing where she said she was Native American and built an academic career off of, you know, being the first woman of color at Harvard, that's kind of an issue. And people like me didn't forget it. You can get mad at me for not forgetting it, but fuck you, she did it. I didn't do it, right? No one told her that she needed to claim to be Native American. I don't care what Pop told her back when she was in, we were just a little poor girl in Oklahoma and we didn't have, like, shut the fuck up, right? Like, I mean, like, you Elizabeth Warren, you at no point in time were penalized in your life because you were Native American. Right, like it was never held against you. You don't look Native American. You were not Native American. And this whole idea that you were told stories, so you're going to base your entire career off a story that your grandfather told you, I'm sorry, that doesn't fucking fly.
Agreed.
You know, I mean,
but I think the bigger point, sorry to cut you off, but I think where you're trying to go with this is...
I'm sorry, you're doing it on purpose.
All right, I am. So this happened to me on Facebook. A friend of mine who's known me for 15 years... put something about Elizabeth Warren. I don't like Elizabeth Warren because I think she's a phony. I think she's a Wall Street hack, and I think she's just not a genuine human being. And she says stuff that she said a few things. I used to be a fan, and then I started paying more attention to her, and I'm like, you know what? You've lost me. So I called her, I think, a corporate shill on Facebook, and immediately, whatever, cisgender man, you're a sexist or whatever. And this is a person who knows me very well, knows my politics, has talked politics with me, has sided with me when liberal Facebook fights all the time. But because I said I didn't like Elizabeth Warren and I did call her a shill, I'm a sexist. Mind you, who's my candidate of choice from the beginning? Tulsi Gabbard. So hard to call me a sexist.
Okay, so the label not goes where up. I was going.
Okay, that's where I'm going.
I didn't want you to cut me off. But so with Elizabeth Warren, my bigger issue with her is that even within her own campaign, she had issues with black women, right? And there are a lot of black women who are, you know, media, social media talking heads and you know, influencers within the Democratic Party that are like, well, we really liked Elizabeth Warren and she had the support of black women all over the country. Like, well, she didn't have the support of the black women in her own fucking campaign. Right? I mean, like, you and I talked about...
We played that clip.
Right, we played the clip, and then you talk about the women who left her campaign because they weren't being heard, they were being mistreated, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Like, you actually have tangible, real-world evidence of her having to work with this demographic that she can speak so eloquently about, right? And I mean that sarcastically. And dare I say... No, I dare you not to say it. You know, like, so... I take those sort of instances and then I put it all together and I say, this is not the person that I, she's just not someone that I can get behind. Not because of her gender, just because of the things that she is doing. And listen, I like for her, I have the same criticisms for Bernie Sanders. I think Bernie Sanders is a fucking, like, this dude didn't do shit until he was fucking 40 years old. He hasn't had a real job his entire fucking life, right? I mean, like, this whole thing with him, it's a crock of shit. Right, like this dude, he's from New York, he goes off to Vermont, doesn't do anything for a while, right? Like tries to do this, tries to do that, none of it really fucking works. He ends up running for mayor, running for governor, all this shit, never, and then ends up being a congressman, now he's a senator.
Yeah.
Well. Right? You know, I mean, and he's saying all these things that he's gonna do, and I don't have proof of him doing anything, even in his own state, and don't tell me about this civil rights thing. Like, all right, that was 55 years ago, so he wasn't a racist 55 years ago, congratulations. Right, but he moved to Vermont. Tell me all the civil rights battles that he won while he was in Vermont.
Well, he did go to South Africa to meet with Nelson Mandela and got arrested. No, I know that was Biden.
That was
I know it was Biden. It was a joke, and it also didn't fucking happen.
Right, like
which
I mean,
is more concerned for Biden.
Maybe he went there, but he definitely didn't get arrested. But the point is, again, I'm going to criticize these people on based off of what they do, what their actions are. Right, and I don't care if you attack me. Oh, well, you don't like Elizabeth Warren because you hate women. Okay, fine. Then if that's what you think, fine. I don't give a shit. All I know, this is what she said. This is what she did. Right? With Bernie, this is what he's saying. This is what his history and his track record is. Same thing with Biden. Right? Like, so right now we're at a point where I've got candidates that are trash. Right? So now I got to pick through the trash in order to deal with the trash that I have in the White House right now.
The best example for you is Pete Buttigieg. Because you've been very critical of Pete Buttigieg.
Yep.
And I know you for a very long time. I'm 100% comfortable saying you are not a homophobe in any way, shape, or form.
Nope.
Yet, I would guarantee you, well, you tweeted some stuff about not, how you do not care for Mayor Pete.
Nope.
I guarantee you, some people saw that and said, whatever, homophobe.
Yep.
You're not.
Nope.
I would say that under oath.
Yep.
And I'm not a sexist. But because I criticized Elizabeth Warren... I'm getting attacked by someone who fucking knows me. Imagine what it's like for people who don't know you.
Yeah, and that's why at this point you I can't worry about that, right? Like I'm not going to sit there and get into an argument about what I am and what I'm not. You call me whatever you want to call me. I don't give a shit, right? I mean, the fact of the matter is, my argument is based off of their actions and how they act, how they behave, and the things that they say, and how those things don't align. Right. That's all I have.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you get mad because that's your candidate and you don't think and you don't, you're mad at me because I don't like your candidate, then that's a you problem. That's not a me problem. But the problem is that your candidate is still unelectable to a majority of the people out there.
Unfortunately, though, in the mainstream, that attack stands up. Right. I mean, cancel culture has gone way too far.
It kind of has, but it's probably starting to reach its limits.
I hope so.
Because you have
enough, always a pendulum.
You have enough people that are out there that are saying, I don't give a fuck. Right? And a lot of, and this is kind of what the Steve Bannons and the Stephen Millers and the kind of the architects of Trump, this is how they did it. What they said was, listen, we're going to say these things about Muslims and Mexicans and immigrants and all that other stuff. People are going to call you racist. Embrace it. Literally, that's what they said. That's what you can find it. You can find it online. They said it on their shows. They wrote it down, and that's what the people who supported them did. They said, all right, fine, call me a racist. I don't care. Right? I'm not a racist. You know, like you heard a lot, right. I'm not a racist, but if you're going to call me a racist, fine. Or they said, well, the word racism has no meaning anymore because you're calling anything that has critical of non-white people is racism, so fine, fuck you, I'm a racist. Right? But the reason why that happens is because people did go too far. Right? Where anything that was anywhere remotely critical of anything non-white was had to be racism. Right. And so this is, and so now it's, well, if you criticize a woman for anything, then you're a sexist. If you criticize a gay person, then you're a homophobe. Like, all right, well, that shit is only going to go so far. Is it good criticism? Right. Or am I just attacking the person because of what they are? Right. Those are two different fucking things. And you have to have the nuance and you have to have the ability to process that. And if you don't, then you're not helping our political conversation at all. So I can ignore you. I can step right past you. You call me whatever. It's not going to hurt my feelings. I don't give a fuck. I'm moving on to the next thing, the next person, the next whatever.
All right. I mean, I agree with all that. And I think we should shut her down.
Yeah.
You ready? All right. We're at Whiskey Congress on social media, Instagram and Twitter, at Whiskey Congress. Jim at WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to email me. Steve at WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to email him. Thank you for listening. And we're out of here.